EBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Davis Police Chief Darren Pytel says a 21-year-old suspect has been arrested for the stabbings of three people in the small California community, two of those stabbings fatal.
These crimes were horrific. They're hard to imagine. They struck fear in the community.
21-year-old Carlos Dominguez was a UC Davis student until last week. Four members of the Proud Boys, including the group's leader, convicted of seditious conspiracy for the January 6th attack on the Capitol.
This came after a 3-month-long grueling trial by the government. And what this does, it essentially takes down what used to be the core leadership of that far-right extremist group.
ABC's Catherine Folders. Lawyers for the failed Republican governor candidate Carrie Lake have been sanctioned $2,000 by the Arizona Supreme Court for making false factual statements. Attorneys General of New York and California investigating allegations of workplace discrimination in the NFL. This is ABC News. Alabama has fired its baseball coach.
The Ohio Casino Control Commission took notice last week of two large bets placed in Cincinnati on Friday's Louisiana State baseball game against Alabama. LSU won that game after Alabama had changed its starting pitcher just before game time. Three states have since ordered their casinos to stop accepting bets on Alabama baseball games. And Thursday, the school fired its head baseball coach, Brad Bohannon, saying he, quote, violated standards, duties, and responsibilities expected of university employees. Bohannon has not been connected to the bets, but an investigation is ongoing. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Family Dollar voluntarily recalling Advil products because the pills weren't kept at the proper storage temperature. Inductees into this year's Video Game Hall of Fame include Barbie fashion designer, The Last of Us, Wii Sports, and Computer Space, which is the first commercial video game. Developers of the 1971 game went on to establish Atari. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Bug Tussle is building out the best fiber network in rural Wisconsin to deliver ultra-fast fiber internet where others can't or won't. Based in Wisconsin and backed by local support, Bug Tussle is bringing fiber internet services to your area at an honest price without any contracts or data caps. Call 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924. Or visit btussle.com and get connected with Bug Tussle today for internet, cellular, and entertainment.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A Madison judge is expected to rule soon on whether a lawsuit to overturn the state's abortion ban will proceed or be dismissed. The case is expected to go to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but no one knows if it will get there before or after the court tilts liberal in August. Attorney General Josh Call says it shouldn't matter.
We're confident in the strength of our legal arguments, and I believe that when the court reviews these issues, that we will prevail.
There's no timetable for when the judge will rule on today's motion to dismiss. Former Badgers football player Marcus Randall L. could get out of prison early. That's despite being sentenced to consecutive life prison terms yesterday. Randall L. was convicted of killing two women in Janesville in 2020. In sports, the Rockies clobbered the Brewers last night 7-1. Milwaukee tries to avoid a sweep today. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come ticket.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football, fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed. Local radio for your community. Civic Media, broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at Civic
Media. And I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Federal Reserve did it again. And Wall Street wasn't all that happy today. A lot of red as I'm looking at my app. Lots of downturns and stuff. And, you know, I was hoping they wouldn't. I was hoping they wouldn't slam on the brakes even harder, because it's going to, I think, going to do some really negative things to our economy. And here to share some thoughts on whether the rate hike was a good thing, bad thing, and where maybe we go from here, I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come share some thoughts. He's the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website, if you want to check that out. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. Great to be in your show, as usual.
So, thoughts on the most recent hike?
I mean, they are trying to slow down the economy. The Fed wants less business, less stuff going on, less people buying stuff. And they think that is the way to prevent increases in prices. And maybe it'll work. I'm not sure. But they're working. They're trying to do that. You know, that's also what's hurting the banks somewhat, too, a few of them. You know, because your investments are worthless. The same way that anything that's future money in the future, when interest rates go up, money in the future is worth less, whether it's money in the future from stocks, bonds, mortgages, investments, securities, whatever it is, the prices of everything is going down a little bit in investments. And that's the intention of the Fed. So
now I had a conversation with an economist who told me that, you know, it was his belief that they were deliberately trying to cause a recession to make things difficult, you know, lots of layoffs, so that they would bring, that corporations would come back into sanity, because as we've been talking about on this show for a while, the greedflation that's out there as corporate America is going, hey, now's a good time to fatten the bottom line a little bit, raise those prices, keep them artificially high to line our pockets. The thought is, by maybe causing that recession, taking money out of people's pockets, that is going to hurt families. But by doing that, that there might be some bit of unstickying the corporate profit motive. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if they can cause millions of people to become unemployed and lose their jobs, that'll be fewer people buying stuff. And people like Chipotle and Wingstop and those others we've been talking about every week will have to stop raising prices. I mean, it's true, but it's one of those things where I think the cure is worse than the disease. I don't want millions of people to lose their jobs. I would rather pay a little more for my burritos and my eggs and everything else and have my neighbors have jobs rather than cut down the prices of what I buy, but live in a city with, you know, people losing their jobs and then marching in the streets. You know, that doesn't work very well for me. So I think inflation is not as bad as civil unrest and mass unemployment.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
So what is the answer here then? I mean, because I've had people go, well, if you're against the Fed raising interest rates, which is causing lots of problems, what do we do?
Well, some of what we do is looking at why companies are raising prices so much. It's because they can. People are willing to pay. Some people are willing to pay more. I think people have to decide, if you don't want to pay more, then don't pay more. If you think the price of eggs is too high, stop buying eggs. If you think the prices of, you know, wings at the sports bar is too high, stay home and watch your sports on TV instead of going to the bar and ordering wings.
Yeah, but that's on those things. I mean, for most people, rents have gone through the roof. Utilities have gone through the roof. You know, basic staples and groceries have gone through the roof. You know, things that average everyday people need going through the roof. And now with these interest rate hikes, I was just reading something that said mortgages are almost, almost double what they were, 10 years ago. So, there doesn't seem to be an answer for working people in this.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to buy houses now. It's very difficult. And part of the reason is rates have risen. The same reason that mortgage rates are up is also causing the problems with these banks. Mortgages that were like 3.5% last year, when a bank tries to sell it, they'll get like 91 cents in the dollar. A 3% mortgage that was a good mortgage a year ago, they'll get like 87 cents in the dollar if they try to sell it now. And that's why if they try to sell them and take that losses that big, they'll be bankrupt.
Yeah, I got to tell you, my mortgage, they're losing on, because I got like 2.75 points, 2.75%. I'm not paying that off until the very end, because, like you said, in the future it's going to be worth less, much less. Now, I found it interesting that the Wall Street Journal this week had a headline that caught my attention. It said, why is inflation so sticky? And they came up with the idea it could be corporate profits. So the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper of the investor class, is saying it could be, we don't know, but it could be corporate profits. Shouldn't maybe looking at taxing them instead of raising everything on us? Should we look at that?
I've been talking about taxing the rich for 10 years now, Rick, especially at our conference in April in Washington, D.C., where you were. I mean, yes, I think there's a lot of people looking at that. People like Katie Porter, bang the table for these things. And yet some of these CEOs are bragging about it. You listen to the Chipotle meeting transcript or, their investor call. And they're talking about, we rose the price of guacamole when avocados went up in price. And then avocados went down in price. And we didn't lower the price, and now profits are higher. Like, that's a surprise. And they're bragging about it. And they're getting away with it. And they're just raising prices because they want to make more money. And there's nothing wrong with making more money. I mean, I run a group called the Patriotic Millionaires. I'm in favor of people becoming millionaires. But what I'm against is sort of blaming inflation on the fact that there's more workers asking for raises, when really it's a lot of companies trying to get more profits out of the people that are buying their stuff.
But isn't that just capitalism? Isn't that how the game, we're told, isn't this the free market?
It is, but free market has never totally worked. We had a free market in labor prior to 1865. We made a decision as a country that we did not want a totally free market in human labor. We wanted to regulate that. We're no longer allowed to buy and sell people and enslave people.
Yeah.
It's a basic decision.
So let me ask you this, because you got the Fed who has done this. I'm hoping they don't do it again. You also have what's going on in Congress, this debt ceiling fight, that this hostage situation where evidently beginning of June we're going to run out of money and there's going to be who knows what happens. It seems like, and maybe I'm just spitballing here, but it seems like there are some forces out there that desperately want a recession, that desperately want pain and struggle for, recessions hurt almost everybody, but especially the working poor. I'm curious. Why?
Yeah. Well, there's two things. With the debt ceiling fight, I mean, I really don't think, I mean, we can argue about what the budget should be for next year, but I don't think it's right to argue about whether we should pay last year's bills that we've already, on money we've already spent.
Yeah.
You can't argue about whether you're going to pay the bills for things you've already bought. That doesn't work. So I think I fully agree with President Biden on that one. And then whether we want to, how much we want to spend next year, I mean, people voted for Republicans, you know, and maybe they voted for, you know, getting rid of, you know, spending money on, I don't know, VA hospitals or something, if that's what they want. I mean, I don't think so. I hope not. But I mean, maybe things will be different next year. But we certainly can't say that we're not going to pay the bills for the money we've already spent last year. That's a non-starter, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it would be catastrophic. I mean, not just here at home, but globally. I mean, when, and there are people talking about, you know, we're going to lose our status as the reserve currency, and the BRIC nations are coming up with the alternative, and a lot of hair on fire stuff on the right, and I don't know that we're there yet. But if we keep doing this kind of stuff,
If you stop paying your credit card bill for, you know, for 6 months, you'd have a problem.
Yeah.
They would lower your credit score, and they wouldn't give you any more credit cards, and you wouldn't be able to buy a new car and or refinance a loan. And that's the same analogy as with the government. If the government misses paying loans they promised to pay, they're going to have all kinds of problems. People aren't going to be willing to deal with the government the same way they are anymore. You know, we're going to lose the U.S. dollar. Part of the reason for our prosperity, we Americans, is because the U.S. dollar is needed all over the world. If you want to buy and sell oil in the Middle East, you need U.S. dollars and U.S. checking accounts. You know, if you want to buy if people in Singapore want to buy an Airbus from France, they need U.S. dollars to pay for that. So people all over the world need these U.S. dollars. That's part of the reason why we're able to finance this debt, is because the U.S. dollar is the one thing that people trust all over the world. And if the Republicans decide they want to throw that away for whatever
political
reason,
points,
it's a problem. I mean, it will cause a lot of problems for a lot of people.
And this is where I think conversations need to be had around taxes and about paying our bills. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. PatrioticMillionaires.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do there. Now, your organization, you know, kind of, you know, shifting topics a little bit, has embarked on this great economy project. And I understand you've just got back from Whiteville, North Carolina, where you guys are trying to educate on a nonpartisan basis voters about taxation and how things could play out. I'm curious, any results, any feedback, anything you want to share?
Yeah, we've been, for the past couple of months, we've done 6 or 8 sessions over the course of a few months where we invite 50 some odd people for dinner and a speaker. And we talk to them about the economy. We've had Sarah Anderson talk to them about how much more CEOs make of big corporations than median workers. And we've talked about the tax system. We've talked about why the tax system makes the rich get richer while they're having trouble getting by. And these are people that vote Republican, that live in Whiteville, North Carolina. Many of them are extremely financially challenged, to say the least. And they're just amazed, the same way everyone else is, when we talk to them about these crazy real rules that mean I don't pay taxes much at all on the kind of income that they're making, and how unfair it is.
And this is where, you know, part of what we do here is, and why I started this, is that education process, because we never hear the other side of the story. You know, the right wing has always been lower taxes. We give it all the money to you because you're smart. And I don't doubt that you're smart, but that you know what to do with it. And I've argued the other side of, yeah, you're smart. You know what to do with it. You're going to make more money for yourself. You're not, I know you're a benevolent guy. You're a good guy. I get all that. But the fact that you're going to care about everybody else, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason why I can sit here in this Park Avenue co-op apartment and talk to you is because over the years, the companies I invest in and the returns on my investments have paid far, far lower taxes than all of your listeners who work for a living. And that's accrued to my benefit over the years. And what we're trying to explain to people, how these rules are making people like me get richer and richer and richer while they're struggling to get by. And we've now got dozens of people who are excited about this. They're going to the Strawberry Festival, and they're going to the Pecan Festival, and they're putting out flyers. So we think we've got a kind of a proof of concept that we can get a small percentage of the people in a rural conservative town in North Carolina excited about talking about economic policies and governments, and excited about talking to their elected officials and doing town halls. And I don't know what's going to happen, but check back in a couple of years and we may change the course of politics.
No, I would be hopeful. I mean, any education is good. I would love to talk to some of those people and have them on the show to get some of their thoughts as well, because I think this is what you're doing is really important work, and I'm sure it'll make a good book on the other side. Last question I've got for you, you know, in the coming days and weeks, what are we expecting, you know, as far as with the rates going up? You know, the stock market didn't look really well today. You've got some expertise in how this works out. What are you expecting?
You know, I don't really care about the stock market day to day. The government is there to make sure your deposits and your bank are safe. They're not there to worry about the stock market. I have plenty of money in the stock market. I don't even check every day. I know that over the course of years, I'm going to do fine. And I don't really care whether I'm richer today than I was yesterday or will be tomorrow or whatever. You can't worry about these day-to-day things. Yeah, there's a bunch of people who say, oh, some bank over there might be in trouble. Let's sell all the stock and let's short sell and buy it back later when everyone's scared. Yeah, people are trying to scare people. And sometimes they work and sometimes it's effective. But I think people, you know, half the people in the country aren't affected by the stock market at all. And most of the other half should probably like not even check every day.
There you go.
Think of it as a long-term thing. If you're 30 and you're going to retire when you're 55 or 60, you know, you don't have to check every day. And if you're already over 60 and retired, you probably shouldn't put all your money in the stock market.
There you go. Morris, I appreciate the time. Great answer. I hope folks will check out the website, Patriotic Millionaires. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
Thanks, Rick. Great to be in your show.
Good stuff. Morris Pearl, Patriotic Millionaires Chair. Check out the website, patrioticmillionaires.org. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, one of the reasons that we started this program. I tell the story all the time. I remember I had just transferred into the area that I now live. And one of my union buddies was telling me, you know, we'd make more money here if there was no union. You know, they handcuff us. We'd make more money. And I just kind of laughed at him. And, you know, when it came back a couple of days later, and I'm like, you know, you do know that you're wrong, right? You were just blowing off steam or something, right? And he didn't. And I said, well, if that's true, if you believe that there's somewhere else that pays you better, why aren't you there? You know, with all the complaining and all the, you know, being upset, you know, why aren't you where you think it's better? You know, there's grass over there. I doubt it's greener, but why aren't you there? And a couple of days later, he comes back to me and he goes, you know, you're right. You know, and he then broke into this, you know, it's what I hear all the time, you know, that, you know, and when I had actually had, when you confronted me, I actually had to think about it. And this is where a lot of this economic talk, you know, we all want to be millionaires. We're all going to invent the next thing. We're all going to go on, you know, we're all going to get our E-Trade account and we're going to make millions of dollars and it's going to be great, only to find out that we lose our behinds because it's not as easy as it sounds. And as Morris points out, he invests for the long haul. Most people who try to do the gambling, the house always wins. But they've trained us like Pavlovian dogs to think about Wall Street. And I'm glad, Morris, that wasn't a setup question. He answered that exactly as I would have wished he would have. And I'm glad he did, that I don't even check the stock market every day. We shouldn't be fixated. But you know what? Every newspaper had a business page. Every time you turn around, there's the business channel. Everything is all about, you know, companies I've worked for every day would tell us what the stock price is. And I'm like, what do I care what the stock price is today? But they train us to think like that Wall Street matters more than Main Street. And the reality is just the opposite. And by getting into these places, which is why I think the organizing that they're doing is incredibly important, by going into these places and talking to people who disagree with you politically or not at all, find that common ground. Taxation should be that one thing that all working people agree on. And I know, as I said, we're all going to be millionaires and none of us want to pay taxes. I get it. But when you look at how the game is rigged right now, you're paying the taxes. And I know the anti-tax group say, no, rich people pay all the taxes because they've got literally all the money. When you look at the distribution of wealth in this country, it's obscene. When Warren Buffett said that his secretary pays a higher tax rate than he does, that's obscene. When Buffett said there's a class war going on, my class is winning, but we shouldn't be. Working people should listen. And this is the weird place of where we are. And I don't know if it's the Steinbeck frame of we're all embarrassed millionaires because we're still broke. But someday we're going to find that golden ticket, or someday, you know, Uncle Rupert's going to leave us millions of dollars someday. And then we won't want to pay taxes. But in the meantime, people are struggling. I say it all the time. I would have during the Eisenhower years, I would have loved to pay the 92% top marginal tax rate. Would have been thrilled to do it. And you go, oh, I can't believe that. I can. I'd be thrilled to pay that because it means I'm making a lot of money. The same thing here. The patriotic millionaires are calling for, what was it? I think it was like an 80% tax, top marginal tax rate on incomes over $100 million. I would love to pay that 80% tax. Would love it. I'd be jumping for joy. I'd be the happiest guy ever. Because that means I'm making $100 million a year. And that $1 they're going to tax at 80%. So, you know, again, we don't see the forest through the trees. This is seeing the elephant and understanding that we're just not getting the elephants behind. But I'll tell you, as Morris pointed out, there is a move that wants pain and suffering for working people. They're telling you we want mass layoffs. They're telling you we want to slow the economy down that isn't all that heated up. our inflation problems? The Wall Street Journal's right. It's corporations. It's corporate gouging. It's greedflation. We know who's doing it. The question is, what will we do to change it? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you'll get ours right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. That evening, a workers' rally in Chicago, Illinois, became known as the Haymarket Tragedy. On May 1st, workers across the city and around the country held massive rallies for the eight-hour workday. 2 days later, the police had fired into a crowd of workers on strike outside the McCormick Reaper plant in the Chicago neighborhood of Pilsen. Two workers were slain and many more were injured. Angry workers called a rally at the city's Haymarket Square to protest the police violence and to call for the eight-hour day. When the police attempted to disband the rally as it was ending, an unknown person threw a dynamite bomb into the ranks of the advancing police. In their confusion, the police began firing their weapons. A total of seven policemen were killed and an unknown number of workers were struck. In the aftermath of the bombing, union offices and labor papers were raided throughout the city. Eight vocal supporters of the workers' movement were put on trial. Four of the men, Albert Parsons, August Spies, George Engel, and Adolf Fischer, were sentenced to death by hanging. A fifth man, Louis Ling, died under mysterious circumstances in prison. Historian Bill Edelman explained the importance of Haymarket, saying, "No single event has influenced the history of labor in Illinois, the United States, and even the world more than the Haymarket affair. It began with a rally on May 4th, 1886, but the consequences are still being felt today." Although the rally is included in American history textbooks, very few present the event accurately or point out its significance. Throughout the world, the Haymarket martyrs are remembered, and May Day is celebrated as International Workers' Day. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
While the powers that be constantly warn us about foreign threats to our democracy from Russian trolls, TikTok, etc., there is scant coverage of an actual assault on our people's democratic liberties by forces on our own soil. It's coming from extremist right-wing Republican lawmakers who have autocratic control over more than a score of America's state governments. Their obscure anti-democracy weapon is called preemption, the dangerous power of state officials to nullify laws passed by local people. It's supposed to be used rarely, carefully, and only in emergency situations, but today's radical big government Republicans have weaponized it, routinely overturning local actions that the GOP's corporate funders don't like. Local decisions to protect worker safety, outlaw loan sharking, shut down puppy mills, prevent workplace discrimination, stop pollution, control political corruption, and so many more popular democratic reforms are being abolished by Republican autocrats in service to plutocrats. Some 500 more of these usurpations are moving through state legislatures across the country now, with practically no public notice. Embarrassingly, GOP leaders in my state of Texas have been leading this charge against the people's democratic will, and they're now enacting a nuclearized escalation of their attack. Their new weapon has been dubbed Death Star, a state law that will preemptively ban cities and counties from passing corporate regulations stronger than state regulation, which is infamously feeble. The ban, gleefully pushed by a horde of lobbyists for brand-name corporate elites, includes letting corporations overturn existing local protections. This is Jim Hightower saying, "This is a wholesale usurpation of your and my liberty to govern ourselves. In exchange for political funding, GOP officials are literally outsourcing the people's democratic authority." Learn more at supportdemocracy.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I go back to the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race that just happened not too long ago, and the fact that, wow, can I say wow again? Wow, overwhelming turnout. Kind of why you're seeing in red states them going after students. Trying to stop them from being able to vote on campus and getting away with early voting and going away from drop boxes and doing everything they can do to make it harder for people to vote. While on the other side, you've got movements of people going, hey, we want everyone to vote. Whether I agree with you or not, everyone has the right to the ballot box and everyone should exercise that. And one of the groups that did an awful lot of work in Wisconsin is the Empower Project. And that's why I've asked their executive director, Mike Fole, to come talk with us. He's the executive director of the Empower Project. Their website, empowerproject.us. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So pretty historic moment, that Supreme Court election, and with huge, huge numbers. I mean, literally, we were shocked at just how big the numbers were. And a lot of that had to do with the kind of work that you guys do.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of great groups doing a lot of hard work in Wisconsin. We were certainly proud to be one of them. We do something called relational organizing, which is getting people to talk to their friends and family about important issues like the Supreme Court race and how it affects their lives, and did as much as we can to make a lot of noise there to get a solid win out of Wisconsin, that's for sure.
Relational organizing. Come on, that's just kind of buzzwordy for I'm talking to my neighbors.
That's exactly what it is, right? Your listeners may be used to just calling that good organizing, right? Back in the days when we were just allowed to talk to friends and family and neighbors and talk to them about the election. Certainly there's still a role in the world for direct mail and talking to targeted voters off of targeted lists, and that's all great. But what we do is try and say, hey, it's also important to talk to the people in your life, be trusted messengers to them, to share important information like how to register a vote, how to turn out, why voting for the Democratic candidate can make a big difference in your life.
Yeah, I've been saying for a while, we need Democratic voters to know how to talk to other family members, especially around the Thanksgiving table, because Fox News has empowered Uncle Crazy to go off every Thanksgiving. We need to figure out how to get him off the ledge, somewhere back to sanity.
There you go. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that we're encouraging folks to do. So we're a nonprofit that works with groups across the country and also do direct organizing ourselves. So we certainly work with union groups across the country, work with AFSCME and AFT and Carpenters Union, things like that. But candidates, progressive organizations, you name it, providing training and technology on how to do this type of relational organizing and how to have those types of conversations with friends and family, everything from partisan conversations about the election to talking about issues, talking about the environment, talking about minimum wage. Whatever it is, but trying to have conversations with friends and family, and all the research shows that can be incredibly impactful. So we're trying to get as many people to engage in that type of campaigning as possible.
No, it's something that we need. I mean, you've made up a new term, and I kind of like it, relational conversations and relational organizing. It sounds 21st century. Because I think we've forgotten how to talk to our neighbors. We've forgotten, yeah. You know, within this era of social media where we're looking at our screens, we're texting, we're Facebooking, we're tweeting, we're you know, whatever. You know, I think we've forgotten how to look somebody in the eye and have a decent conversation that doesn't devolve into name calling or threats or whatever. So I think this is incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, even outside of electoral politics, how we move through our everyday lives, you know, you think about, you might watch 100 ads on the TV about how great a movie is, but if your friend goes to see it and tells you, hey, this movie's horrible, don't go see it, you're going to trust your friend over, you know, all those TV ads. It's no different than in politics as well. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's so many people in these days that seem to be stuck in their own media bubbles and have trouble to break out. And there's not a lot you can do to break people out, but sometimes just being able to have conversations with those friends and family. I wish I could say this magically could pull your QAnon believing uncle away from the ledge and you know, get them to see the light of day after one conversation. And obviously it's never that easy. But what you can do is, you know, there's plenty of people in your life that don't really follow politics and maybe don't really understand how things like the debt ceiling or Supreme Court race or voter registration law changes, things like that can impact their everyday life. And being able to just have conversations about, you know, why are you paying attention to politics? You know, what matters to you can help pull people away from the brink so they don't get sucked into those rabbit holes.
We were just talking a moment ago to my friend Morris Pearl. He's the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, and they're doing this this kind of the same thing that you're talking about in Whiteville, North Carolina, where they're talking about taxation. They're talking about an education process about, you know, top marginal rates and who pays the taxes and who pays, you know, higher or lower rates, and a whole educational process of getting into people's faces and having honest, actual conversations with people you agree with and disagree with. I see what you're doing kind of in the same vein, bringing people back to the public square, bringing people back to face-to-face and doing that education process. Yeah, you're right. We're probably never getting Uncle Crazy off the ledge. But you might be able to moderate him a little bit at the dinner table to where everybody else around the table maybe gets a word in too.
Yeah. And as well as just getting people to realize how just the little things they may not understand that in their life that is difficult is related to politics, whether that be, you know, laws that are against suppressing the vote or changing how they can unionize or anything like that. Being able to have simple conversations with your coworkers and with your friends and family can make a difference. I mean, we've trained at this point 82,000 people from over 1,000 organizations on how to do this style of organizing. Again, we give away free software and free training to groups, any progressive organization in this space trying to do this type of work. So we're trying to get as many people as possible just to add this into the toolbox, along with all the other campaign tactics that groups can use to try and affect change in this country.
And what does that look like? If someone wanted to get involved and want to become a relational organizer, what would they learn? What would they go through? What's the training process?
Yeah, certainly. So if anybody's involved with an organization or a union or things like that that would be interested in doing this type of work, can come to our website, empowerproject.us, empowerproject.us, and you can sign up there. And we're happy to have conversations with you and see what your needs are. And again, get you free training and free software to be able to do this type of work. Obviously, if you have your patriotic millionaires, it sounds like, if there's anybody else in the space that, you know, is interested in donating to the cause, feel free to go to our website as well and help us get as many organizers doing this as possible. But really, it is as simple as getting trained on how to have these conversations. We can, again, provide the technology to track and manage that work so people can do it at scale and kind of stay organized while they do it. But it really hasn't changed all that much from the way organizations have been doing this for 100 years, right? This is how the union movement worked 100 years ago. This is how civil rights movement was. This is how the suffragettes were able to organize in the country. It wasn't based on having the perfect digital ads. It was having conversations with friends and family. Certainly, we've kind of given a new twist over the last decade here. We've been doing it, calling it relational organizing and adding some kind of digital and technical components to it as well to help things scale more efficiently. But the fact that this is just good organizing really hasn't changed over the last 100 years.
No, look, as a union organizer and as someone, a union activist, I've knocked on more doors than I can count. And I've had, you know, conversations, a lot of them, you know, good and a lot of them uncomfortable. But that's democracy. That's right. The art of persuasion. So, you know, when you're training for this, what are some mistakes that people make when they're doing this relational organizing? Are there things that can be honed a little bit better? What should people expect if they go through one of these trainings?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to do is kind of unlearn some of the things that you've maybe learned while going through, say, a door program or a phone program with traditional campaigns.
Like, you don't want me standing there arguing with them and screaming at the top of my lungs. That's probably bad,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It's probably still not good to do that even in a normal door program. So the goal is not to memorize 6 perfect bullet points that you can recite and yell at the person and convince them, right? It's more about just being able to tell the story of, you know, why do you care? It's really that simple, right? Having a conversation with somebody who doesn't maybe think about politics or think about why it matters to them and how is this impacting your life, and why is it you decided to join a union, or why is it that abortion access is so important to the women in our lives, things like that. It's just a simple conversation. You don't need to get defensive. You don't need to be shouting at anybody. And if you're shouting at somebody, you're definitely moving in the wrong direction here. And that can be a little uncomfortable to people who have been involved in politics for a long time, because that's not really how we're trained to do this. But I'll tell you, normal people take to this very easily. I'm sure we've all been a part of campaigns where somebody for the first time is handed a list to go knock doors and they say, wait, why? I don't know anybody on this list. And it turns out it's okay also to spend that time calling through 20 of your friends and family and explain to them why you're supporting a given candidate. And it's not because you memorize specific bullet points. It's just because you can say, here's what I believe in, here's why. And the people in your life trust you and will listen to you. And that can make an impact on the actions they take.
The website, empowerproject.us. Mike Fole, Executive Director of Empower Project. Again, you want to check out that website. Lots of information there. So, you know, when I knock doors, and I've done it, you know, less lately than I have in the past, pandemic kind of screwed that up. But I always found that listening and getting people to talk, that was the way to go for me anyway, because I found that the more I talked, the less they listened and the faster conversations ended. That's kind of some of the things that you may be training people on, because I don't know that most folks know how to the nuts and bolts or the how-to. Not that there's any right or wrong way to talk to your friends, but there is a method, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of the first step is kind of building a list of who you're planning to talk to. And that obviously that's a lot of what we train on. You know, again, depends on the goal of the campaign and who you're as a campaign, maybe you're trying to target. But typically it's thinking of the people in your life who you think maybe aren't involved in politics, you know, maybe aren't registered to vote or don't vote frequently. Again, that's where our technology can certainly come in, and people can build a list and match it to the voter file to see if their friends and family are in targeted areas or tend to forget to vote and could use a friendly reminder. So kind of list building stage is certainly an important part. And then the next part is having the conversation. And truly the word is conversation. You're absolutely right. It's definitely a lot about listening. It's not, again, it's not memorize 6 bullet points, text it to your friend and walk away. It's having a conversation. Here's what I believe. Here's why I think this is important. And then listening, you know, what is the person you're talking to thinking about in their life? And typically they probably haven't even thought about the issues that you're bringing up. And that's maybe why you thought about them as somebody who isn't political. And the other piece is then repeating that over and over and over. It's not one conversation, we've changed the world. It's having repeated conversations over multiple weeks. Again, simple conversations. It's not sitting down and talking to somebody for 5 hours. It's maybe, you know, in between talking about the local game or something like that, and then you bring up a politics conversation for a minute or two and then move on with life, and you just do that for weeks and weeks and weeks, and you're listening to what they care about, and you can learn from them, they can learn from you, and over time you can take somebody who maybe doesn't think about politics and get them to you know, eventually voting or running for office or whatever it is at some point,
or just, you know, thinking clearly again. Being able to talk to your friends and neighbors. I think this is incredibly important. It's something that I've been saying that needs to happen, that we need to talk to our friends and neighbors and the people in our social circles and our spaces, get out from the behind the screens and actually have conversations. So I think it's incredibly important what you're doing. I hope folks will take a look at it, the Empower Project and Project empowerproject.us. Mike, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Keep up the good work, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thanks so much, Mike Foyle. Again, empowerproject.us. Check that out. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have a good time. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. This was one of the most significant days in U.S. labor history. A mass meeting of workers was called for that night in Chicago's Haymarket Square. The purpose of the meeting was to protest the police brutality that had killed and injured strikers at the McCormick Reaper plant the day before. Rally organizers were part of the movement demanding an 8-hour day. The rally was much smaller than organizers had expected. Rain began to fall as the last speaker was finishing when an army of 200 policemen appeared demanding the meeting disperse. Someone, unknown to this day, threw a dynamite bomb into the ranks of the advancing police. In the confusion of the moment, police began firing their weapons indiscriminately into the dark. When the smoke cleared, police had killed at least 4 in the crowd and wounded many more. A total of 7 policemen were killed. Most were killed by their own gunfire. In the aftermath of the event, unions were raided all across the country. The 8-hour movement was effectively derailed. 8 men were put on trial in Chicago. Some were not even present at the time the bomb was thrown. They were put on trial for their ideas. Four of the men, Albert Parsons, August Spies, George Engel, and Adolf Fischer, were sentenced to death by hanging. A fifth man, Louis Ling, died under mysterious circumstances in prison. The remaining three went to prison and were eventually pardoned by Illinois Governor Altgeld in 1893. Before he was hung, August Spies declared, "The day will come when our silence will be more powerful than the voices you strangle today." His words proved true. The Haymarket Martyrs inspired and continue to inspire labor activists throughout the world.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. You know, I was thinking during the break, imagine that. Imagine talking to your friends and neighbors. I know it's shocking, and they've got a new name for it: relational organizing. It's new. I always love buzzwordy stuff. Wow. But here again, if we're going to save this country, because look, all of the polling that's been done on how torn apart we are, how we're in our different camps and all of that, show us going in a not so good direction. And this is where I keep coming back to this moment of where we can find common ground, we should, where we can have conversations, we most certainly should. For instance, I've had people who have over the years, called me all kinds of names, told me how much they wish bad things would happen to me. And, I said, call me, let's have a conversation. Let's talk about this. And sometimes I've actually recorded them and put them out for podcast. Because I think we need to know how to have these conversations. And look, sometimes they're going to get heated. Sometimes they're going to be ugly. But we got to do it. We've got to find a place where, we don't hate each other. I may disagree with you. And I talked about this. I've talked about this before. I've always had people I disagree with. And I've got people that I talk to that I disagree with now. I think you need that, if anything, to center you and to make you think about your own values and your own ideas and be able to defend them. But understand that people have other priorities and other ideas too. That whole life, liberty, pursuit of happiness thing that I believe in, that's part of it. Again, we may not agree. We may yell and holler and scream and pound our fist on the table, and that's okay too. In fact, some of the most heated, spirited discussions I've ever had have been over politics and religion with people I disagree with. And at the end of it, we shake hands or we have a beer or we move along, agreeing on some common things. We almost in this moment cannot be in a world that we find common ground on anything. You've got to be absolutely for or absolutely against. And you've got to have your hats on, or your t-shirt or your letter. You got to have the R or the D instead of going, look, how do we move forward? I've said before, I'm a green conservative liberal libertarian. If it's a good policy, I don't care what label you slap to it. If it's going to make working people's lives better, I don't care who gets credit for it. And we can talk about issue after issue where there are things that all across the spectrum may be a good idea. Maybe we add a couple of things, tweak some things. Maybe we work out for the best solutions. But we're not in a moment right now where solutions are the goal. We're in a moment right now where the division, the hatred, the defiance of that's the goal, to keep us looking at each other side-eyed or with disdain. I miss the days where I had honest conservative friends who were willing to verbally joust. Now everything is, people get offended a lot more easily. I've never really been offended. You know, I've had people ask me, don't you get offended? No, I don't get offended by anything. Well, that's not true. Offended, no one's ever said anything that's gotten me offended. Hungry children, I'm offended by a society that allows that. I'm offended by a system that doesn't help the homeless or doesn't help the mentally ill. I'm offended by politicians who grandstand on nonsense and fight for, you know, tax cuts for the very wealthy while literally taking the food out of children's mouths. And I remember that stuff as a kid. You know, I remember the Reagan era where they gutted the social safety net. And a lot of those programs that I was fortunate enough to benefit from and that gave me a helping hand to be able to live the life that I've led, those were being eviscerated. And the public education system that I benefited from that got me through high school and into college, that's being taken away. And it's being done, this is the interesting part, for all the partisan wrong reasons. You know, I had someone say, you know, well, wouldn't you want to send your kid to a private school? Yeah, okay. Am I going to get to send it to the private school that Harlan Crow paid for Clarence Thomas's grandnephew to go to? No, I know that's never going to happen. $6,000 a month to go to kindergarten. I say take those resources, that money that we're wasting, put it into making the local public school the best it can be. Because look, we've got some real problems. I don't know if you saw the latest story that's come out that the civics tests that are these NAEP tests that are out, the civics scores for eighth graders are at the lowest point in 28 years. And now, could that be, you know, 30 years of disinvestment in education and poison pilling? Probably. Could some of it be the pandemic? Sure. Could it be all the misinformation and insanity we get from our corporate-controlled media? Yeah, it could be all of that. But here's the problem. We've got a situation where we've got kids that are struggling. And instead of going, hey, how do we pick the pace up? How do we get more investment, more teachers, smaller class sizes, maybe longer school years, maybe longer days, maybe who knows what? Maybe we haven't even thought about the next way forward. We're not talking about that. We're talking about banning books. We're talking about banning books. It's insane. You've got an outraged group of Moms for Liberty who are pursuing destroying your local public school because there's a book on the shelves that their kid was never going to read until someone told them they couldn't. I mean, that's the amazing thing. All of the, throughout history, when we've done book burnings, nobody was reading those books until someone said you can't. And I think this generation has forgotten that, never knew it. Who knows? But we're in a moment, and there is a way forward. And that way forward is, well, talking to each other, face to face. I've been saying this for years. The kind of conversations I have on social media are nowhere close to the kind of conversations I have when I talk to somebody directly, when you can hear their voice, when you can see their face, where if need be, you can reach out and touch them. Now, I'm not advocating for reaching out and touching anyone, but there is that possibility. It keeps things a little more civil, keeps the discourse a little less sharp. And in this moment, it's something that we need. Because understand, the struggle is real. You know, when I was doing our Working Class Heroes tour back in October, I spent more time listening than I did talking. And that's odd because I talk for a living. But I did more listening than talking because I want to hear what they have to say, what their struggles are, what their story is. And invariably, what I came across is people are hurting. And there's no help at this moment. They don't trust their government because they've been trained not to. Corporate America doesn't care about them. In a lot of places, their unions abandoned them because the jobs went away. And they feel like there's nothing. And this is where we've got to reach out to someone in our community. We've got to be part of our community. We've got to rebuild our community. And take off the red hat and the blue hat. Get on that hard hat. Thanks so much for tuning in. Check out the podcast if you missed any portion of the program. See you next time.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic ABC Media app. News.